Well, has the thought ever dawned on you with any real force that the most fully human, perfect, and complete person who has ever lived was single and never married? And what about this thought? That Christ's greatest apostle, Paul, who unquestionably was the most influential person to impact the early church, lived his entire Christian life as a single person and remained unmarried. Furthermore, in his inspired New Testament writings, especially to the Corinthian Christians, Paul set forth many practical advantages and stated many good reasons why some people should remain single rather than marry. Well, obviously, singleness is something desirable and of great value for those whom God has equipped and gifted to be so, as well as it being of great value to the Church of Jesus Christ and, in turn, to the whole world. In fact, as we've seen, nearly half of the seventh chapter of 1 Corinthians is given over to this subject, which we began considering last week, in verses 25 to 7, where we learned in the first place that remaining single is good because of the distressful realities of opposition and persecution in the world. In verse 26, Paul wrote, you can look there again, referring to the state of singleness, "I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is." The Greek word for distress has the idea of constraint or necessity. And what's in view here is the constraint and pressure of opposition and persecution that the church at Corinth experienced and was experiencing even in the first century. And in light of that rising and mounting persecution resulting from believing the gospel and following the Lord Jesus Christ, Paul's advice to those who had the gift of singleness was what? It was to remain single rather than to marry. We considered that perhaps this has some practical application and relevance for Christian singles today amidst the rapid escalation of opposition and persecution of Christians in many places throughout the world. Surely this is most relevant for Christians in war-torn and terrorist-ravaged regions, where remaining single may reduce the heartache and anguish resulting from witnessing harm and atrocities, not only to oneself, but also to one's own spouse or children. There was a level of present distress due to Christian persecution and opposition that caused Paul to recommend remaining single as good. And it may be, and I suggested to you last week that it may well have application here, that in light of present circumstances today in certain regions of the world, that Paul's advice to singles would be the same today as it was then. That it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you loose from a wife? Are you free from a wife? Then do not seek a wife. Well, the second reason for remaining single that we considered last week was in verse 28, where we learned that remaining single is good because there are difficulties and troubles indigenous to the married state. In verse 28, Paul wrote, "But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh. But I would spare you." Trouble is the Greek word philipsis, meaning tribulation or difficulty. And here it means that there will be certain kinds of fleshly or earthly troubles for those who choose to marry. You just can't avoid them. I've never met in all of my nearly 60 years anyone who has said, marriage has been blissful and carefree and trouble-free. No, that just is not the case. Troubles are just part of the package deal that we call marriage. There are difficulties resulting from being part of a husband and wife relationship. And it has to do with numbers, right? We talked about the math involved. When you're single, you only have yourself to deal with. But when you're married, there are two people in very close proximity to one another, and that means there's a greater chance of what? Of conflict and trouble. And then, of course, you can consider children, and that multiplies the matter of potential troubles exponentially. And therefore, Paul says that staying single is good because many difficulties and troubles that accompany marriage can be avoided for those who are enabled by God not to marry and whom God has called and equipped for a life of singleness. For them, Paul's wish was that they be spared from those difficulties and troubles that are part of the married state, which is why he wrote, notice at the end of verse 28, "Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you." Well, this morning we'll look at two more reasons why remaining single is good in verses 29 to 35, which is today's text passage. I printed reasons 3 and 4 in your bulletin. Take a look at them there on the right-hand side under sermon notes. Reason number 3 in verse 29 to 31 is remaining single is good because life is brief and all temporal things are passing away. Reason number 4 in verses 32 to 35, remaining single is good because a person can serve God with more undivided attention. Again, the third reason Paul gives why remaining single is good is in verses 29 to 31, which is, again, remaining single is good because life is brief and all temporal things are passing away. Look at verse 29 again in your text. "But this I say, brethren," Paul said, "the time is short, so that from now on even those who have wives should be as though they had none, those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as those they did not rejoice, those that buy as those they did not possess, and those who use this world as not misusing it, because the form of this world is passing away." Now, Paul draws our attention to two things in these verses. First, at the beginning of verse 29, he says, notice, the time is short, which simply means that life on earth is brief. If you're young, you might not realize that yet as much, but if you're a little older, you will already begin to understand it quite well. It's like the Apostle James described in response to the question, "What is your life?" in James 4:14, to which he responded, "It is like a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." The second thing Paul draws attention to is at the end of verse 31, which is this, notice, "For the form of this world is passing away." The Greek word form is schema. It refers to the outward fashion or appearance of things. And what it conveys here is the idea that everything, listen, everything in this world is temporal, transient, and passing away. That's the point Paul's making here. And he makes it especially for the sake of singles. We'll see why in just a minute. Because here's what I want you to especially notice in the passage. Paul mentions four things that Christians, especially single ones, need to regard as temporal and as parts of the passing system: marriage, human emotions, material possessions, and worldly pleasures. These are things that Christians, including Christian singles, shouldn't be excessively attached to. That's what he's saying. These are things that you shouldn't be excessively attached to. Why? Because they're all things that are passing away. You'll see them in the text as we work our way through it. First, in verse 29, marriage. Marriage is something temporal and is part of the passing system. And that's why Paul says in verse 29, "But this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on even those who have wives should be as though they had none." Now that expression, "should be as though they had none," doesn't mean that because life is brief and temporal, believers should just, shrug off the responsibilities of marriage. No, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean that a husband, for instance, can stop loving his wife and act as if he, didn't have one. No, on the contrary, it simply means that marriage is something temporal and part of the passing system, the schema, the form of this world. You see, Paul knew what Jesus had taught on this subject in Matthew chapter 22. Just make a note of it, Matthew chapter 22 and verse 30. Namely, that in the age to come, Jesus taught, no one will be married, because everyone will be like angels. In Matthew 22:30, again, just make a note of it, Jesus said in the resurrection, referring to the eternal state, people are neither married, he said, nor are they given in marriage, but they are like the angels of God in heaven. Matthew 22, verse 30. So marriage is only a temporal human relationship that lasts for a few years or decades, but it is not an eternal relationship that will continue and be experienced and sustained in the life to come. And some Christians are a little surprised when they learn that. Some are quite disappointed to learn that, but others are a little bit relieved, and maybe a little happy. But it's unquestionably what the Bible teaches. Now, by way of application, I trust you see how this relates to the theme of this passage, where Paul is giving good reasons for remaining single. As it relates to marriage, he says it is something temporal, not eternal. So if God has gifted you to remain single, has He? Perhaps you might sense that or know that about yourself. If God has gifted you to remain single, then you can do without it. You can do without marriage. And it won't have any bearing on eternity. Because in heaven, no one will be married, but everyone will be single, like the angels of God in heaven are. So don't think, I better get married now because otherwise I'll have to spend eternity without a husband or a wife. No, in heaven the only spouse you'll have is Jesus Christ. And He is all that you'll ever want or need. So no worries. Now the second thing that Paul says needs to be regarded as temporal and as part of the passing system that Christians shouldn't be excessively attached to is in verse 30, which is human emotions. And he gives two examples of that in verse 30, weeping and rejoicing. Look at verse 30. Those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as those they did not rejoice. What's Paul saying here? Simply this. As a Christian, don't become overly attached to or moved by human emotions. Learn to control them and ask God for help to do that. Because it's possible to get so carried away, and perhaps you've known people or even suffered with it yourself, perhaps it's possible to get so carried away by things like joy or sorrow that you'll be of no practical use or utility for God's purposes. It's possible to get so caught up with what makes the world happy, or so sad with the loss of something dear to you, like a loved one, that your human emotions get short-circuited, and you can't function properly anymore. And unfortunately, this kind of thing happens too often, even with people who profess to be Christians. Let me illustrate. I know a man who lost his wife several years ago. She died at about age 60. And the husband was so undone with that loss that he turned to drink and drugs and ran himself into financial ruin. He ended up on the streets homeless. Why? Well, he couldn't manage his human emotions. He was excessively attached to something, to his wife. And his affections and emotions were inordinately bound up with her. And consequently, when she died, he just cracked up and fell apart. He couldn't handle it because he hadn't treated marriage as a temporal thing. You got that? He couldn't handle it because he hadn't treated marriage as a temporal thing. And consequently, his human emotions were shipwrecked when God took his wife away from him. So, Christian, don't become overly attached to or excessively moved by human emotions. Learn to control them. And ask the Lord to help you to do that, because that's His will, is that you'd be able to. But don't mismanage your emotions and be worthy of the rebuke Paul later gave to the Thessalonians in chapter 4, verse 14, where he warned, "But I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep or died, lest you sorrow as others who have no hope." Well, the third thing at the end of verse 30 that Paul says needs to be regarded as temporal and as a part of the passing system that Christians shouldn't be excessively attached to are possessions. Look at verse 30, the end of it. Those who buy should be as those they did not possess. What's Paul saying here? Well, he's warning the Corinthians and us, by way of application, not to get too preoccupied and enamored with material things. We've got to remember and keep reminding ourselves not to become strongly attached to material possessions. Because why? Because the form of this world is passing away. Roger Ellsworth, in his book entitled Strengthening Christ's Church, wrote, I printed it in your bulletin on the right-hand side in blue. Look at it. He says there, the first one, the Christian is free to use the things of this world, but he is not to become so engrossed in them that he forgets he is a pilgrim here and his real treasure is elsewhere. Remembering the shortness of life gives the Christian a true perspective on material things. End quote. Christians must view their material possessions as temporal and regard them all as parts of the passing system and must not be excessively attached to them. The fourth and last thing, very briefly, in verse 31 that Paul says needs to be regarded as temporal and as part of the passing system that Christians shouldn't be attached to, are worldly pleasures. Look at verse 31. And those who use this world as not misusing it. Now the word misusing here doesn't mean misuse resulting from abuse, but rather misuse resulting from overmuch or excessive use. So what Paul means here is Christians shouldn't use this world to excess, because that would be to misuse the pleasures of the world. Believers can legitimately engage in and enjoy pleasures, but they must not overindulge in the use of them. And that's the point that Paul is making. So none of these four things are inherently evil, are they? None of them. Marriage, human emotions, possessions, material possessions, and pleasures. They all have a proper place in the Christian life. However, any of them can become sinful. Listen, any of them can become sinful if Christians become too strongly attached to them or preoccupied with them. Paul's warning is against being in bondage to things which in themselves are right and good. And therefore, it's of the utmost importance to view and regard them as temporal things and as parts of a system, the form of which is passing away. Here are the applications from the first point. Christians have the privilege of both enjoying pleasures and enduring suffering without being excessively affected by them. I'll repeat it. Listen to it carefully. Christians have the privilege, and really only Christians do, of both enjoying pleasures and enduring suffering without being excessively affected by them. This means that Christians can enjoy pleasures within moderation, knowing that the best is what? The best is yet to come. So they don't have to squeeze every last drop of joy and pleasure out of this life. Why? Because there's another life to come. And believers can endure suffering in this life upon the same principles. That in the life to come, there will be no more what? No more pain and no more sorrow. As one author put it, whether our tears arise from the consciousness of our own sins or the sins of others, whether from persecution or contempt from the world, or whether from the loss of health, property, or friends, we are able to endure it all patiently because it will soon end. End quote. Think of it this way, Christian. Every sorrow you experience in this life will shortly give way to the absence of all grief. And every earthly joy that you experience now will be multiplied 1,000, 10,000 times over in glory. And therefore, Christians have the privilege of both enjoying pleasures and enduring suffering without being excessively affected by them. Second application is this: view the world in which you live and all of the things that comprise it, including marriage, from an eternal perspective. Again, view the world in which you live and all the things that comprise it, including marriage, from an eternal perspective. Remember that all things, including marriage, are temporal and passing away. Simon Kistemacher, in his commentary on 1 Corinthians, wrote this. He said, "We should not make earthly things our ultimate objectives, whether we are married, cast into sorrow, given to joy, or acquire possessions. Christians should not become absorbed by them. Instead, they should see the transient nature of these things and know that after having passed through this earthly veil, believers will enter eternity." End quote. What Kistemacher is saying here is our point of application, namely, view the world in which you live and all the things that comprise it, including marriage, from an eternal perspective. Now, the fourth and final reason Paul gives why remaining single is good is in verses 32 to 35, which is this. Reason number four on your outline: remaining single is good because a person can serve God with more undivided attention. Look at verse 32 in our text. He says, "But I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. Now, all throughout this passage, Paul is making a sharp contrast between two kinds of people: the unmarried or single person and the married. In verses 32 and 3, it's between the unmarried or single person and the married person. And in verse 34, notice, it's between a wife who is married and a virgin who is single. And the point of contrast is repeated twice so that you can't miss it. And it's simply this: that those who are married, wives and husbands, must care for the things of the world and please their spouse, while the unmarried or single person does not. Why? Because they don't have one. They don't have a spouse, right? This contrast appears first in verse 32, where Paul writes, look at it with me, "He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord." And here's the contrast: "But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife." And then Paul repeats the contrast a second time in verse 34, where he says, "There is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be both holy in body and spirit." And here's the contrast again: "But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband." Now, what's Paul's point here? This could be possibly a little confusing. Is he saying that only unmarried or single people really care for the things of the Lord, while the married person cares only about the things of the world? And is Paul suggesting that it's only the unmarried single people who care about pleasing the Lord, and that married people only care about pleasing their wives and husbands? Is that what Paul is saying here? Do you think that's his point that he's making? No, obviously, that isn't the case. Because a person's marital status, listen, a person's marital status is not the measure in any way of his or her spirituality. It just isn't. And what a tragedy it is that some religions, even some that profess to be Christian, believe that spirituality is related to singleness or celibacy. Some of them, by the way, seize upon a phrase like the one in verse 34 that says, "The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit." And they conclude, listen, they conclude that the only way to be holy in both spirit and body is to forever remain a virgin and be single and celibate. But that's not what Paul is teaching here. It isn't. In fact, quite to the contrary, being single has nothing whatsoever to do with personal sanctification and holiness. In fact, there are plenty of people who are single who are vile and unholy, right? And there are plenty of people who are married who are godly and holy. So what's Paul saying here? What did he mean when he wrote that she who is unmarried may be holy both in body and in spirit? Simply this, listen. A single person can be separated, and that's what the word holy means, separate. A single person can be separated unto God both physically in body and spiritually in spirit. In other words, a single person has no physical attachment to a wife or a husband and has none of the responsibilities that are part and parcel of that attachment. Furthermore, a single person has no need to care about the things of the world in relation to pleasing and providing for his or her spouse. Therefore, for the single person, there are fewer bodily physical cares and responsibilities, which enables the single, in a relative sense, as Paul said at the end of verse 35, to serve the Lord how? To serve the Lord without distraction. Or at the beginning of verse 32, to be without care. As John MacArthur aptly stated it in his commentary, I printed that in your bulletin too on the right-hand side in blue at the bottom. Single Christians, whether formerly married or never married, are not intrinsically more righteous or faithful than married ones. But they are able, because of fewer family demands and obligations, to be more devoted to the Lord's work. Practically, the unmarried person, both in body and spirit, is potentially able to set himself or herself apart from the things of this life more exclusively for the Lord's work than is the married. So the sum of what Paul is saying here is this, namely, that to remain single is good because a person can serve God with more undivided attention. However, the apostle makes it clear in verse 35 that remaining single is something completely voluntary and is not mandatory or compulsory. Look at verse 35. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. The phrase, not that I may put a leash on you, is key. The word leash in the Greek is brachos, meaning a noose. Some Bible translations, perhaps the one you have, use the word restraint, such as the English Standard Version, which says not to lay any restraint upon you. And the sense is that Paul didn't want anyone to feel under restraint to remain single and unmarried. This is the only place where this word appears in the New Testament, but it seems certain that this is the meaning. By saying this, Paul grants complete freedom. Listen, complete freedom and liberty, and leaves the decision to marry or remain single entirely up to the individual person. He recognized that all could not be single as he was, but he had no wish to restrain anyone from lawful marriage, and therefore he left the door wide open for singles to opt for marriage, provided they wanted to. So here are the applications in conclusion. I have two. First one is this. Single people have practical advantages over married people in rendering service to the Lord. Again, single people have practical advantages over married people in rendering service to the Lord. There's no way around it, right? I mean, any way you cut it, it still comes out on the advantage side for the single person. It just does. I'm almost feeling a little disadvantaged right now as a married person. You know what I mean? I mean, there's no way to escape the implications here of what Paul is saying. Because in no uncertain terms, Paul teaches here, listen, that single people have decided advantages over married people as it relates to serving the Lord, as it relates to rendering service to the Lord. There are fewer encumbrances, fewer responsibilities, and fewer distractions for singles than for marrieds. And the practical advantage of that is the opportunity for greater service and more undivided attention to the Lord for singles. Second application is this, as we draw to a close, remaining single is entirely optional for Christians. Again, remaining single is entirely optional for Christians. This matter of whether to marry or not is such a freighted subject with so many personal implications and consequences that God doesn't forbid anyone from opting to marry. In other words, God won't put the leash of singleness on you. He won't make it mandatory for anyone, even for those who may sense that God may have equipped me or gifted me in this particular way. But you may, however, for the good reason of serving Him more fully and with more undivided attention, put that leash upon yourself. You can put it on yourself. And by doing so, you may have opportunity for more undistracted devotion and service to the Lord. But only you can decide that. You can have an undistracted devotion and more undivided attention to serve the Lord more fully if you want to take advantage of it. But ultimately, the choice is yours to make. Are you someone whom God has given the gift of singleness and celibacy? Because even if you are, He will not put that leash or restriction on you, but He leaves it up to you to put it on yourself, to the end that you may serve the Lord without distraction and with more undivided attention. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction.